Hey, this is Terry Farrell of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and I'm here to invite you to join me and the Inglorious Trekspert as we go on the ultimate road trek, visiting the most iconic Star Trek locations ever filmed. We'll share fun facts about scenes that were filmed there, their incredible Hollywood histories. We may even fight a Gorn or two along the way. We have many special guests from Star Trek movies and series. You can reserve your copy of this epic new documentary on Blu-ray or DVD, along with a gaggle of intergalactic rewards, such as Ernie, the pet Vasquez rock, limited edition collector pins, cool sci-fi swag, autographs, of course, and so much more by going to makethetrek.com and supporting us as we boldly go to the greatest Star Trek locations ever filmed. Go to makethetrek.com and let's see what's out there. Engage.
Hey, this is Mark Altman of Inglourious Treksperts in the 430 movie. And if you're a fan of our podcast, you don't want to miss Deck 78, available now by subscribing at treksportsplus.com. This is a bonus podcast full of great discussions about popular culture, film, and television. By your command, here's a sneak peek.
But isn't that an advantage you have? You know, people think, oh, writing is just about writing, but it's not. You're also doing the line of the line producer.
Oh, yeah.
You got to understand, like, what you can afford to do and what you can't. And that makes you a valuable commodity as opposed to somebody who has to be rewritten, not because they're not a great writer, but because they don't understand budget and they're writing these shows that are unproducible.
Yeah, I call it writing inside a box, which is basically writing to a budget, but without limiting yourself creatively. There are ways to do that where you're actually challenging yourself in a way that you find something better than you might have otherwise if you had the money for it. One of my favorite things to do is trap characters because it forces them into situations that reveal themselves. And you know, so you could put people on a run on a city street in Rome or trap them in an elevator. You're going to find more about them by trapping them in an elevator. So there are ways to write economically that are actually better creatively. Yeah. And so you just got to take those opportunities when they come.
Derek, you started as a writer's assistant. Do you think that was sort of a great incubator for you finding out reasonably budgeted show, Andromeda, you know, working for Robert.
It was called syndication.
But the first run, the old days of first run syndication. Yeah. And now we're pining away for those days. At the time, it was like, oh, what the hell? And now it's like, yeah. Oh, first run syndication, remember that? So did you learn a lot in that hard, fast crucible of being a writer's assistant? And also what, you know, how you write a script that is producible for a limited budget?
Sure. I mean, you observe and as a writer's assistant, you're watching these writers pull their hair out as they're trying to figure out how to write in a box. Because most of the time, you know, writing the bottle episode is the most expensive episode.
Yeah.
It's like you start out with the intent of like making sure that this is an episode where we're going to be able to afford and do and all. And it ends up costing more somehow
every single time.
And, you know, since we don't have the luxury of going to Italy on Quantum, I was like, we go to Italy on the Universal backlot. You know, it's like we're going to go to this country on the Universal backlot.
Like, so.
Not unlike the $6 million man did.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. So subscribe today at treksportsplus.com and don't miss a single episode of Deck 78. Fire the rockets.
Hey, this is Mark A. Altman.
And this is Darren Doctorman.
And this is Ashley Miller.
And we are the Inglorious
Treksperts. And we're back with some musings from the Mitara Nebula, some mail from Mars, and talking Trek. Goes back to Darren's roots. Talking Trek.
We've had a lot of iteration from anxious anchors placed in powerful posts.
We've had a lot of great interviews in the last couple of weeks. A lot of
That's
great
for
interviews.
Sure.
Bill Shatner, Kevin Feige, Terry Metalis, Steve Asbell, Gary freaking Lockwood. And we thought it was time for us to just kick back and talk Trek a little bit without,
any responsibility.
Yeah, without any
particular requirements.
We got some letters we want to talk about some other stories.
We got letters.
Stories.
Boy, yeah, we got letters.
It's funny. I actually had to. This is sad. I was in the middle of watching the Galileo 7 with my son because my son has suddenly decided that he's into Star Trek, and okay. We've been watching in order and having the greatest time. And he yesterday we watched Conscience of the King, which he just freaking loved. And today we watched Shore Leave, and then I had to stop at Galileo 7. And he turns to me before I leave. I said, "I got to go do the podcast." And he said, "You know, Dad, I'm glad I didn't serve under Spock between Star Trek The Motion Picture and Star Trek II. He would have been a terrible captain." And I'm like, yeah, I know, right? Exactly. I mean, because he's watching Galileo 7. He says, "Spock is the worst captain." And I said, "That's why you need, you know, emotion and passion. And you can't just solve problems with logic. You can't logic your way to success." I didn't have the heart to tell him that Strange New Worlds, apparently Spock has already been captain, and I don't even know.
You did explain to him,
captain of my heart,
that the seven on the side of the Galileo is just a coincidence.
Yes.
That the title of the episode is the seven people on board.
Seven people. I did not explain
that. The Galileo seven were the seven people.
Yeah. Well, they weren't seven for long.
Not for long.
They all started getting, you know, speared and chucked.
Galileo seven, six,
thrown on the
people,
and then there were five.
Well, yeah.
Let's see. Latimer gets it. Boma. No, Boma survives, right? I don't remember, but Latimer gets it early.
Latimer gets it early, and one other guy.
Yeah, yeah. He's loving that episode.
It's not D'Amato. It's a different guy, but kind of the same guy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not D'Amato. But, oh, my God, he was
D'Amato,
so funny.
I say D'Amato.
We were watching Shore Leave. And, because it was, unfortunately, you know, the woman who played Angela and had been in Balance of Terror.
Yeah, just passed
died
away.
Recently. Joe DeGusta's wife.
Right.
Ex-wife. And watching them in air order, you know, she basically loses her husband in Balance of Terror. The next week, you know, she's making moves on Esteban Rodriguez. Right. And he's like, "Man, that was a short period of mourning."
Well, you know what? Everybody grieves in their own way. All right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Remember, she was like, "Okay, it was the 60s.
That's true.
That's right.
It's like, I lost my husband.
Too much LDS.
At least Esteban Rodriguez is here, and he's an expert on strafing planes.
Sure. Not JT Esteban.
Not JT
Well,
Esteban.
We don't know.
It could
we
be.
We don't know if he's related.
He could have grown up to become... that was his last name, Esteban, in Star Trek III. But his first name is Esteban in...
No, well, maybe.
It's Esteban Rodriguez.
We don't know. We don't know.
What? It's not Rodriguez Esteban. It's Esteban Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's
I was having fun creating new canon.
Yeah, damn it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, you don't want to mention Star Trek III because it's going to, you know, set people off again.
That was a movie?
That was a movie. That was a movie, yeah. So, and it's funny. I got to tell you, we had a really great experience. This is going to shock people with Disco Trek. We were at WonderCon, and we were coming from the White House, which is a restaurant we all love. And I will get back to that. But we got picked up by this Uber. This disco Uber.
Yeah.
And we get in the car, this big, you know, one of those big seven people vans. And it got like, it looks like, what was it called? 2001 Space Odyssey from Saturday Night Fever inside. And he got a whole candy bar.
This, like this disco ball on the front divider. And he was projecting multicolored sparkles everywhere in the cab. And he had big troughs of blow pops and
I was going to say, well, if he had a big trough of blow that you could do off a hooker's ass.
No.
That was
And pink starbursts.
Nice. Which we found out. His favorite customer. It was not us, although we tipped very generously. Not as generously as the man who gave him a $700 tip in cash. You know who that man was?
William Shatner.
Wrong.
No.
Gary Lockwood.
No.
No. Mr. James Cameron.
I'll be damned.
And Mr. James Cameron loved the candy. Loved the candy.
Loved it.
And it's so funny because the driver was great. We loved him. I wish we could have given him more than 5 stars because that's sort of the default. Unless somebody really screws up, I give him 5 stars automatically. Sure. This guy should have gotten like 18 stars.
Yeah, he was great. You
know, he was great. Or at least 7, the Galileo 7. But he starts talking about how he's a big fan of Cameron's and he knows his work. And he says, you know, what's really underrated is The Abyss. You know, they shot that in a whirlpool. And I said, you know, Darren over here worked on The Abyss. And then he starts telling Darren fun facts about The Abyss. And I said, no, Darren worked on it.
I was fascinated to learn these bits of trivia.
It was remarkable. It was so fun. But he was delightful.
Yeah.
So we talked about aliens and we talked about True Lies, but mostly about The Abyss. Mostly he wanted to explain how they made The Abyss to Darren. Not long enough.
It wasn't long.
It wasn't long enough.
15 minutes, maybe.
It was like a whole podcast with that guy.
Well, it's so funny. Darren and I get out of the van. The first thing we say to each other, we look at each other and say, well, that's going in the podcast. He was great. It was exactly what every Uber trip should be. I mean, he was friendly. The experience was great. There was free candy. And we talked movies. He said, when we got out, he said, I'm going home when my shift is over and I'm going to watch The Abyss again. Oh. Like, you do that. You know, Darren worked on The Abyss.
I'm sorry. I missed it.
Oh, we missed you. We missed you at WonderCon. It was a really fun time. We had a nice dinner at Morton's. I have to tell you, we had the best time. You'll appreciate this at the White House, because the White House is this great restaurant. Darren was the one who reminded me how much we love the White House and that we should make a reservation. Thankfully, he did. And we were joined by none other than the estimable Derek Hughes.
I'll be damned.
And he was, what a great, you know, because we all love Derek. We know Derek, but we've never really hung out that much with Derek.
Yeah.
And he was so delightful. And we had such a good time with him. And unfortunately, he was so enthusiastic about his hopes that, because he's a writer producer on Quantum Leap, co-EP on Quantum Leap. And, you know, he was really looking forward to the show being picked up. They're having a great experience. And then I saw in the trades like 3 days later, it got canceled, which was so unfortunate. But he's a big fan of yours, obviously, because you gave him his big break.
Yeah, it's like, what a crazy story that was. We met at the LA Comic-Con, this as it was called.
Is that the one that was at the Shrine?
Yeah. And
the Shrine?
We were jockeying for position to watch Tom DeSanto do a presentation on the X-Men movie.
Mm. Right.
Which is, there are so many levels of meta to that are just, it's difficult to
express.
Because
you've worked with all those people.
Yeah, ultimately. Exactly. I mean, I went to freaking Finland with Tom like last winter, you know, with my kids. It's just crazy.
Santa Claus.
Yeah. And Derek and I, like, we were, when I say jockeying for position, we were kind of nudging each other out of and into position. And it was one of those things where, you know, you either need to throw somebody over a railing and kill them or become friends. So we decided to become friends. I got him a job as the assistant on Andromeda. We were just thick as thieves, man. He is one of the best humans I've ever met. And
he's had a great career since.
Yes,
and
he has.
Provided this wonderful opportunity because he's gone. And we did our Inside the Writer's Room panel, which I called the therapy session this year because everyone was so down about the state of the industry. But it was really terrific. We're going to throw that up on Deck 78 in a couple of weeks. It was great. It was, you know, see Sarah Watson. It was her birthday.
Did you sing?
We did not. We spared the audience.
You bastards.
Sing. I was going to do Beyond Antares, but no, we did not do that. Or what is it? The moon is
Charlie
us.
Is window a to heaven. Darling, darling. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sing that.
But that was great. And of course, Max Every came out, the author of Masterpiece in Disarray, and we did a terrific panel on Dune 1984 with Max as his publicity tour continues for Masterpiece in Disarray. It was the third time we had a chance to interview him. I think it was probably our best interview with him.
So naturally.
We don't have a recording of it. Yeah.
Well, yeah. You know, there was a lot of practice to get to that one great performance.
Yeah. But it was a long road getting from there to here.
We talked a lot about why that movie's special and what's great about it and how it's different and still at the same time very similar to the Villeneuve movie. And I thought it was really good. But, you know, I think Max is really enjoying the chance to get out there and talk about his book, which is just wonderful.
That's a great book.
And I'm glad that we've been able to spotlight it and introduce so many people to it who hadn't heard about it. So that's been great. And so it was a fun time at WonderCon. We tried something new with the SmackDown. We had we did Star Trek movies versus Star Wars movies, and that was really interesting. And we got a nice response to that. All in all, it was a great weekend.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
hopefully next year. Maybe next year.
But people were asking about you.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people asked about you. A lot of people asked. They said, where's Ashley? Where's the third musketeer? Where's Dr. McCoy?
He's at home washing his tights.
There's no musketeers here.
No, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. So I got a question. So which one of you is Spock and which one of you is McCoy?
Oh, that's a great question. Depends on what we're talking about.
You know what? I think all of us are each character.
I think you're right.
At different times, the triptych. No, I'm not talking about the AAA triptych.
No,
that's different. That's a whole different kind of triptych.
No one remembers that.
Yeah, I do.
But I think at different times we serve different roles, and I think we've each taken Kirk, Spock, and McCoy at different times.
All I'm saying is, one day there's going to be solar flares, and GPS is going to be out, and you're going to be glad you have that AAA triptych.
And
that's the only way you're going to be able to find anything.
Well, the Thomas Guide isn't going to help me very much in Dallas.
Well,
but,
that's not my problem.
No. Well, we've been getting a lot of interesting mail recently. A staple of the mailbag, and we've heard a lot from them recently, is Dr. Bethany Howe. Bethany said, "You asked one another if each of you would make the same decision Captain Sisko made in the pale moonlight. Of course, you all said yes, because it clearly needed to be done. And you are all decent, critical thinking human beings. Here is my question, however. Would Sisko have chosen to do it if he had known what he was actually choosing? Yes, he chose to create false evidence to bring the Romulans to the war, requiring Garak's special form of assistance. But in that initial moment, would he have also chosen to work with a former criminal, trade a restricted substance which could be used for terrorism, issue bribes to cover up a crime, and authorize a murder as well? I don't know. Part of the genius of that episode is not just the choices Sisko makes, but the repeated and increasing magnitude of those choices. He starts with simply deciding to mislead via forgery, and by the end, he's rationalizing murder. I'm not one for the whole slippery slope argument, but in a time when I see so many Trump supporters rationalizing and defending the things the man does, things that they never would have thought they would abide 6 or 7 years ago, it does stop to make me think." So I thought that was a very interesting question.
I think my response to that is tough times need tough decisions. And I think that like any hero or leading character in a show, I think they need to be decisive and they need to stand by their decisions. And I think Sisko does that.
Yeah, I'm not sure he would have made that decision if he knew where this was all leading. I'm not sure he would have. I think it's a really good question.
If we all know the future, then it's much easier for us to make decisions, right?
That's true.
The answer is we don't. And we don't have that luxury, and no character has that luxury.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tend to agree with my esteemed colleague. I think that the point of his repeated, I can live with it, I can live with it, is about his realization that were he to be given the opportunity to make that choice, right, as a rational actor who can affect a change in one way or another, would he have done it? The answer is that yes, he would have. Mm-hmm. And it would have to be something that he would have to live with, because it was really the only thing that could be done. I mean, the true genius of that episode is that it managed to, in lesser hands, Garrick doing what he did would be rescuing the main character from the choice he has to make that isn't very likable. Okay. There's a version of that where it's, okay, we're keeping Sisko's hands clean by having Garrick do this, but we still get the outcome that we want, and it's cheating and it's bullshit and it's terrible writing. But what's great about how it gets handled is that the entire episode builds to that moment. Garrick does what he does, knowing who Sisko is. And I prefer to look at Garrick's choice not as, Sisko, you never would have had the cojones to order the death of the ambassador and do what needed to be done. I think in his own way, Garrick was rescuing Sisko. It was a decision that had to be made. And I think that Garrick knew how Sisko would respond. I mean, it's so good, man. Like I could talk for hours about that episode and that moment.
It is so good. It's such a great episode. And every time I watch it, I have a new appreciation for it. I have to add that Bethany also, in addition to what they said about Pale Moonlight, had a great degree of approbation for our mutual friend, Rob Burnett. And given the amount of abuse that is sent Rob's way, I feel like I should read what they had to say about Rob, because it's very sweet. They say, I'm a transgender woman who has had an ideal transition. The majority of that stems from being a fully funded research fellow studying transgender people at a public university. I was literally given my PhD, and I've had always felt that meant giving back. I really feel like I'm not doing enough. Literally, given the education that saved and created my life, I'm constantly wondering, am I making a difference? Given all the shit that's happening to transgender people, I feel like I'm not. Rob, yes, our Rob, help me figure it out. Well, Rob and a cheeseburger. Just over 25 years ago, long before the PhD and my transition, I was hit by a bus. I should have died. The only reason I didn't was because I decided to have a cheeseburger instead of a steak. A quick and simple choice, but one that set in motion a chain of events that left me critically injured but not dead. As a result, over the years, whenever I'm asked what the biggest decision of my life has been, my answer is easy. I wanted a cheeseburger. Those huge decisions we worry and stress about, meh. It's the ones we make every day that probably matter more, and unless there's something enormous like a bus and mortality involved, we'll probably never know it. Honestly, it's a more joyous way to live. When everything you could do matters, you learn not to stress too much about what it is supposed to. Rob helped me see that. Also applies to how I am making a difference. We expect you to step up. That's what Star Trek always said. You have the potential to change the universe, and you never know when that moment might come, but your actions could save an infinite amount of people. 25 years ago, simple action, the choice to have a cheeseburger, saved my life. And even if I now understand that moment, I certainly didn't know the infinite magnitude of its relevance to my existence then. By the same measure, however, I have to believe that the actions I take every day to step up and make a difference might also be saving a life. Is that an infinite amount of people? Mathematically, maybe not, but it's important sure as to that person. And that is more than enough for me. Rob, I'll say it again. You're amazing. Wow. Never heard that before.
Never heard that.
Are all of you. Thanks for once again making Star Trek ingloriously relevant to parts of my life I never would have understood on my own, of course.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then they add, I must admit, in a world in which I live, Rob would not be the person that I would peg as constantly giving me something meaningful to reflect on. I don't even have a chance to not get invited to the kind of parties he has. But he keeps doing it again and again, which just goes to prove y'all's point. That's sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Aww. I thought that was very nice. And I'm glad because, you know, I think Rob calls it like he sees it. And I think that for better or worse, you know, he gets a lot of love and a lot of abuse for that. And
infinite diversity and infinite observations.
Because his nickname used to be Kiss Ass Rob. We used to say that because if he would be completely obsequious to people and just go on and on about how amazing you are. But the thing we always said was, it was not disingenuous. It was always honest. When he would go on with Larry Cohn or John Philip Law for 45 minutes extolling their genius, it wasn't because he was exaggerating. He truly felt that way.
It's not bullshit.
That passionate. No.
Yeah.
It's not bullshit. So, you know, it's just, you know, and Rob, if it's on his mind, it's on his tongue. And he, you know, he was not made for this generation where, you know, there are things you should not say or you know, that you get excoriated for having the audacity to share publicly. Anyway, I thought this was very nice.
That's very good.
It is.
Speaking of very nice, this is great. Ashley, you haven't heard this. So you remember our odyssey at Columbus, Ohio, when the printer lost our posters. Well, we got a lovely email from one of our listeners, Greg Scott. He's a huge Star Trek fan,
Friends with Greg Caesar's ghost.
And he's a big fan of the podcast. He's been going to Galaxy Con Columbus for a couple of years. And I guess he first heard about us in Star Trek Explorer magazine. He said, I couldn't believe it when you shared your story of ordering printed posters from a local printer here in Columbus. As it appears, Galaxy Con is continuing to expand in Columbus, Ohio. I would invite you to order any further printing from me. PXP Ohio, which is my commercial printing company in a suburb just east of Columbus. I can confidently guarantee you that there's no printing company in Central Ohio that is owned and managed by a bigger Star Trek nerd than me.
Wow.
And he goes on and on. At the very end, he says, there would be no couriers involved as I would personally deliver your order myself.
Oh my goodness.
Thank you for the wonderful podcast. I've been enjoying the 430 Movie Podcast and more recently purchased both volumes of the 50-Year Mission and a huge fan of all that you do. Oh. My birthday is in March, right between William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy's. My father's name was Gene. I feel it was almost destiny that Star Trek would occupy such a large portion of my being.
Please so he me. Personally will leave it at the abandoned loading dock.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
He personally no way in. There's nobody there. At the convention center, there's nobody there. Mm. What is it, like a wink of an eye? Like what's
yes.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's what happens. Maybe they were sped up and they were there, but we just didn't know because they were sped up.
You couldn't interact because it was moving.
By the Scalosians.
Or maybe the transporter coordinates were just off.
That's right.
Yeah.
Like Mark of Gideon.
Like Mark of Gideon, yes. Sue the Librarian is back, which this is wild what she sent to us. You may recall during the holiday specials, we went on a bit of Trek archaeology, thanks to Darren, trying to find out if indeed there was a White Castle ad that showed on Channel 5 in the mid-70s. Well, Sue the Librarian said this story touched her heart. She lived in New Jersey from the mid-1960s through 80 and watched plenty of shows on WNEW, including Wonderama, and was thrilled to hear that Mark won the leapfrog on it.
She
tried to track down some information on the said commercial. This is what she did. One, my messages to White Castle on Facebook and Twitter weren't unanswered. Two, the White Castle website guards against the kind of contact I needed in order to ask my questions. Three, but their website did list their PR firm. I called that number, and Wendy Schwantes answered. Four, she said that when White Castle moved their headquarters to Columbus in 2019, they gave their archives to the Ohio History Connection. We agreed that I would contact those folks, and she would contact White Castle.
Oh my
Five,
goodness.
I then wrote to OHC. Matt Benz said, thank you for contacting the Ohio History Connection. Your email was forwarded to me for a reply. Regarding your question, we will take a look at the archives and see what we can find out about the Star Trek advertisement commercial. Six, a few days later, Matt's colleague, Daniel Willis, the audiovisual archivist, wrote, hello, Sue. I wanted to reach out and let you know that we went through our collections of White Castle material. Our video material ranges from 1957 to 1970 and is almost entirely footage of holiday parties or documentaries about the company. We do not hold any footage of their commercials. I wish we could offer better news. Seven, finally, Wendy from the PR firm wrote, I'm so sorry, but I didn't have much luck either. One person recalled the commercial, but they have no information or footage of the commercial.
Well, one person recalled it. That means it's real.
I would have also been happy with non-AV information. However, I'm guessing there were probably never enough money, staff, urgency to digitize any paper materials, such as notes or correspondence. Wow. And even if any paper materials existed, they're probably not well organized to hunt through. I know because all archives have the same problem. Darren, I'm very sad that this quest was not successful, but at least now you know that a more thorough investigation has been done. And at least Wendy found one more person who remembers the ad, as did someone else on your Facebook page, as I recall.
I feel like we've got, like, who are, like, the Buckaroo Banzai's, like...
The Blue Blazer regulars?
Yeah, the Blue Blazer regulars.
We have our red shirt irregulars.
That's right.
Yeah.
They've gone out to do the investigate work, come back. There's nothing we can find, Buckaroo. There's no White Castle commercial.
I'm hesitant to believe the report because she said that she talked to someone named Wendy. Wendy's. They're trying to throw us off the trail.
Schwantes.
Wendy Schwantes.
But she does say, if we ever update our listeners on this conversation, you might want to mention Wendy, Matt, and Daniel's names. These folks didn't have to spend any time whatsoever on this. I greatly appreciate their efforts.
Thank you.
We are very
Wendy, Matt, and Daniel.
We can make you honorary
red shirt regulars.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's right. I forget honorary Trek experts. Now people want to be red shirt regulars.
Yeah.
That would be, obviously,
Nick Meyer knows where that reference is from because it's the Baker Street irregulars that were the followers of Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, Darren, come on. Nick Meyer knows everything.
I know. That's what I said. He would know that.
Of course. That's not all he knows. He's the smartest man in the world.
In the Alps fighting grizzly bears, he would kick an ass or two. No,
he doesn't fight them. He talks them down.
Yeah.
This is true. No, okay. It can't all be fun and games. Because we have a review. We have a review from the Apple Podcast.
I'm bracing
not
myself.
Not a fan. This person.
Okay.
Are you ready? Are you sitting down?
Okay.
Is this why they're installing seatbelts on the podcast?
To keep people from leaving. Yeah.
I gave the show a chance. Uh-huh. But the pervasive negativity makes it hard for me to tolerate. Others might disagree, and that's fine. Unlike the hosts who treat their own opinions as objective fact. I get that my view is subjective, but I wanted to submit this review to give fair warning to those who don't like this show's kind of snobbery.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, you know what? I look forward to listening to this person's podcast, where I'm sure they would not treat their own opinion as law. Of course we treat our own opinions like they're correct. Why wouldn't we have the opinion? It's our podcast. Why wouldn't we?
That's right. And we do disagree. So if
we
disagree, but our opinions are law, then the law is confused and the law must be changed. Yeah.
The lawgivers.
Yeah. The inglorious lawgivers.
But
Your microphones, you may need them.
I'm sorry. This is too negative for me. We've been accused of this from time to time, which is funny for a podcast that celebrates the love that we're too negative. I think having an opinion that's anything but positive about anything
but
qualifies
saccharine,
you as
love is wrong.
That kind of cuts to the quick a little bit. Because look, there is a difference between saying, I love Deep Space Nine, and that's what I want to talk about, but avoiding talking about aspects of Star Trek that I don't like. And it's like, we don't do episodes that are like, Hey, and this week we're going to talk about Star Trek Discovery. And, you know, for the next 45 minutes to 90 minutes, we're going to talk about all the things that make us nuts. Like,
that's what the internet is
for. That's what the internet is for. And when we talk about something like Star Trek III that we have some negative opinions about, we talk about it from the perspective of people who want to love it and love things about it. Yeah. It's not about, I don't think we beat that movie up. It's not like we say, well, Shatner really sucked in that film. We tend to avoid devoting lots of real estate to things that we don't like. But we have to not like things in order for liking things to mean anything. Yeah. If we love it all, then we're just test pattern Trekkies.
Liking everything means liking nothing.
Nothing. That's right. And that's our opinion, and it's law.
No, it's interesting. I absolutely agree, and I think that's why the way we've tackled Star Trek III, for instance, is so interesting. Because of course, I think one of our best episodes was when we had the Harv Bennett, Gene Roddenberry notes. It wasn't just about our opinion.
It was
about
the people who made it. It wasn't our opinion. We gave the actual facts.
Yeah, and I feel like we ended up defending Harv a lot.
Yeah, and then given the fact that people had been so hurt by our commentary, who did we bring in to defend Star Trek III? You know, we brought in three of the most articulate Star Trek III lovers we could find to stand up to us, you know, which was Kevin and Terry and Steve, which was great. We didn't bring people that we could trample on with our opinions. We brought people who could stand up to us, and that was what made that such a great episode.
Yeah. That's called respect.
Yeah, exactly. What Aretha Franklin called respect.
Yeah. But I hope this never becomes a podcast where we sit around and we just complain about shit we don't like all the time. Because then I think it really is time to end the podcast.
Why would we want to? Yeah. Isn't that a waste of time?
And energy and, who needs that?
I mean, we're talking about what we love, you know, and occasionally, you know, we'll...
Occasionally it has to be tough love.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. Which is funny because that brings me to something I want to talk about this episode, which is somebody recently, I've seen this a couple of times now on the social channels where people talk about, you know, Star Trek, the subject of this very podcast, is the greatest show, greatest television show of all time. Next Generation is the greatest show, bar none. Now, I got what may be a stunning admission to some of you who may be surprised to hear this. I don't think the three of us, believe that Star Trek is the greatest TV show of all time. It is the show that obsesses us. It is the show we are most passionate about. It is a show that consumes our waking thoughts. But I don't think it's the best TV. You know, like if we were doing a list of the, you know, top 10 or top 25 or top 50 greatest shows, TV shows of all time, wouldn't be number one. No. None of them would.
Yeah. I mean, they would probably make they would definitely make the longer list. Because
they the list. I mean, certainly some of them would. The original, clearly. Next Generation would be on the list at some point. Yep. Deep Space Nine would be on the list. Right?
Yep. But
and
it's
then,
like...
And there it ends.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you don't have to... This is a flip side of what the previous letter was asking about, right? Which is the things that we don't like. That is also possible to love something above all other things and acknowledge that it doesn't have to be the best. It just has to be the thing that speaks to me the most.
Well put, Ashley. Thank you.
Okay, we're done.
It doesn't have to be the best. But I want to ask you, though, but here's the question. Then what are some of your favorite shows of all time? Like what is on that list? Like, you know, it says a lot about you, and maybe it's a way of, maybe these are shows that people haven't watched that they may watch. I mean, that happened with Wise Guy. I was so happy when we had Kenny Wall on. Right. A bunch of people said, oh, I never seen Wise Guy, but I watched it. I loved it. You know, that was great. So, I mean, what are the shows for you? You know, you don't have to tell me in order or what your number one is, but like, what are the shows that speak to you that you consider either better than Star Trek or certainly, you know, on par, right? Darren?
I have to say that, you know, at the same time that Star Trek was taking over my brain. Right alongside it was Mission Impossible, and I've talked about this before.
Good morning, Mr. Briggs. General Rio Dominguez, the dictator of Santa Costa, makes his headquarters in the Hotel Nacional. We've learned that two nuclear warheads furnished to Santa Costa by an enemy power are contained in the hotel vault. Their use is imminent. Mr. Briggs, your mission, should you decide to accept it, would be to remove both nuclear devices from Santa Costa. As always, you have carte blanche as to method and personnel. But of course, should you or any member of your IM force be caught or killed, the secretary will disavow any knowledge of your actions. As usual, this recording will decompose 1 minute after the breaking of the seal. I hope it's welcome back, Dan. It's been a while.
I love Mission Impossible. It's not the greatest show in the world, but like Star Trek, it reached me at a very malleable age. And I absolutely love it. And even just days ago when I turned on Pluto to watch it, I love it. And it just has a sort of a storytelling style that really spoke to me. I found it engaging. And sure, it's not all that complex if you're paying attention, but it's a lot of fun. And I like to think that others share my enthusiasm for it because it's still, you know, one of the big IPs at Paramount.
Well, it's so interesting about Mission Impossible that Star Trek and Mission Impossible both came out of the same studio, Desilu, because Mission Impossible, like Star Trek, was very much unlike anything else on the air. You know, yes, Star Trek came after Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, came after Lost in Space, but it was so different from those shows as to be virtually, you know, you think it's a different genre, right? I mean, and it's the same thing with Mission Impossible. Although stuff like I Spy and The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and there were, you know, other spy shows.
Yeah, there was lots of spy shows.
But nothing like Mission Impossible. It was very serious.
Yeah.
There was no character. Like, it was not you know, something bad. There was no characterization, right? You never went home with them. You never knew what their relationships were like.
You just saw them at work.
Down, Barbara, you just saw them at work, right? And that's why it's so different than the movies, obviously, too.
Right.
But it was all about the Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
You know, it was fairly complex. And even though a lot of it was shot on the Paramount back lot and, you know, around town, it felt like they were globetrotting, which actually I Spy really did. But Mission Impossible, if you watch, it doesn't feel claustrophobic. It doesn't feel like, you know, they're always in L.A.
Yeah, they were always within the TMZ zone. I guess that's redundant, but
it was a great
30-mile zone surrounding L.A. Yeah,
it's a great artifact of the Cold War.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great Cold War series. I mean, Mission Impossible is really, and I mean, I think it was interesting because at least for a while, like when we were watching it as kids, Star Trek at 6, Mission Impossible came on at 7.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. You know, I used to enjoy watching it. I couldn't tell you much about, I don't remember the episodes that well. You know, I don't remember the plots very well. It's not like Twilight Zone or something.
Because they're all just convoluted enough.
Were you a fan of Mission Impossible, Ashley?
Yeah. No, and I kind of loved a bunch of things in that genre. I loved Man from U.N.C.L.E. Actually, the thing that that floated my boat, again, in that genre was The Avengers. Patrick McNee and Diana Rigg. And, you know, I lived for that show. It's like, I just loved their relationship.
But they were more about, the relationship and the characters than Mission Impossible, which was always about the plot. I mean, it was Nick Meyer who said Star Trek was a radio show, right? And Mission Impossible was a movie, right? Was all visual. And Star Trek was all dialogue. And, you know, I think that The Avengers and Man from U.N.C.L.E., and I Spy, much more character-centric and less about the plot.
Yeah, and I always enjoyed Mission Impossible. So that was you know, it was a super cool show. I don't know that it spoke to me to the same level that it spoke to Darren, but it doesn't have to. You know, it's funny. I'm sorry, Darren. I have invalidated you by not completely validating you. I'm a bastard. Weirdly, like I remember, and maybe it's just because of when it was on, and it was all that weirdness during the writer's strike in the 80s when they were remaking Mission Impossible with the original scripts and all that. That is somehow more imprinted onto my brain than the originals.
Interesting.
And I can't tell you why. I don't
Jane
know
Badler. It was Jane Badler. That's why it's more imprinted on your mind. Okay. She was in that. But she was living in Australia, and she was one of the team.
Australia.
In that remake. Wasn't that a fascinating period?
Jane Badler.
Where they remade, I told you, the Alfred Hitchcock Presents and Mission Possible with old scripts.
Right. Yeah.
You know, during that strike. So interesting. You know, and never to done again. Like they never, that strike was unique because there were a bunch of shows where they were just taking old scripts and remaking them.
Kind of brilliant.
Evil. Yeah.
But brilliant. I don't know if it's evil. It's just, you know, kind of, you know, it's just doing what they're doing. But
we should do a strike episode. There's a strike coming. What TV shows do you remake with the original scripts?
Oh, easy. BJ and the Bear.
Yeah. So what's the show?
Well,
so
Gary mentioned all about fighting monkeys and BJ and the Bear is what you got. Gary Lockwood
is the bear.
I didn't even read the letters on Gary Lockwood. Most of them were like it blew people's minds, and you know, and then you know, and Karen Walker, you know, she said wasn't my cup of tea, and I get it. It wasn't everybody's cup of tea.
That's fine.
A couple of people thought we oversold. You know how outrageous it was, but the response was terrific. People were huge fans of that episode. I didn't even go there. So, what about you, Ashley? He mentioned Mission Impossible. You mentioned BJ and the Bear. Other shows that speak to you in a more even profound way than Star Trek, or on the same level?
There were, you know, recently actually. Sort of this accidental discovery, and I don't even know why I started watching it, and it had no business being as good as it was, but wow, like it just sort of hit me. There was a show, it started life on Cinemax, and I know what you're thinking. God knows.
It's, The Hitchhiker.
No, it was Banshee. So the first couple of episodes of that show is very much a Cinemax show. And you can see they're meeting the network notes for like what that is, right? But Banshee evolved into this show that was about masculinity. It was about responsibility. It was about violence. It was a very violent show that was extremely anti-violence because it depicted the wages of that. And it just, once it kind of found its groove, man, like about halfway through that first season, it just evolved into a show that was exciting to watch, but had great characters. It was, oh my God, who is he? And he plays Homelander on The Boys. Why am I blanking?
Oh, I don't know his name. Anthony Starr.
Yeah, Anthony Starr is the lead in that show. And man, he is so good. And I'm not saying it's the greatest show that's ever been made. I'm just saying it's the greatest show that's ever made. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it found a place in my heart that I didn't expect it to find. That and Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. But there you go.
I love that you love Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I went through a love hate. I love the first season. I liked the second season. I really didn't like the flabby middle. And then the finale, the last season was phenomenal.
Yeah, agree. Mrs. Maisel is how I became friends with, I became friends with Ryan Condal because of our mutual love of Robert E. Howard. And then our bond deepened over texting each other about Mrs. Maisel episodes. Can you believe the costuming?
That's so hysterical.
Frazetta's paintings of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel were not as good as the Robert E. Howard paintings.
If Frazetta did paintings of the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, that would be the best thing that ever happened, frankly.
And I love that Rachel Brosnahan is playing Lois Lane. I think that's great.
She's perfect. Yeah.
So, look, obviously for me, I mean, I have a couple shows that I would definitely put ahead of Star Trek. I mean, Mad Men which is just which is set in the same era. And some days I feel like, you know, it could be. And Star Trek is even name checked because one of the characters is trying to get an episode of Star Trek that Gene Roddenberry to have produced.
Even though back then they weren't taking unsolicited scripts from non-writers.
Yeah, exactly, which is hysterical. I mean, I a lot of shows people talk about and have never seen, you know, but they're considered classics. But The Wire to me is one of those shows that I just think is brilliant. A lot of HBO at its height, you know, The Sopranos, The Wire, 6 Feet Under, these are all great, great shows.
And, you know, as much as everyone loves Better Call Saul, which is amazing, Breaking Bad is absolutely monumental. Yeah.
Well, the two of them. And, you know, I have to say, you know, obviously Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould are huge original Star Trek fans.
Yep.
And they've mentioned Star Trek, I think, in those shows as well. They've name checked some Star Trek stuff. But I interviewed them both for my book, along with Jennifer Hutchinson for a 50-year mission. And it's great hearing them geek out about Star Trek. Yeah. And I only wish that Vince Gilligan had the chance to do a Star Trek series because it would have been spectacular. Because it would have been about character.
Yeah.
It would have been about character.
The thing I think it's you have to say about Breaking Bad, like whether you love it or you don't, and by the way, I completely love it. Like I adore that show, is that it is one of those shows that has achieved the sort of apotheosis that Star Trek has achieved or the X-Files has achieved. We should talk about that too. But where when you're talking about a show in a pitch, when you're looking for a comp, it's like Breaking Bad, but with a monkey trainer. You know what I mean? Like it's... You pitch things as though Breaking Bad is your a baboon trainer. That's the comp, man. It's like it exists in its own space. It has it has literally defined its own genre, and it is very rare that a show can do that. And you know it's in Breaking Bad managed to.
But even more, it's even rarer for a show to start out that way and maintain consistency throughout many
get
years.
Better.
And just that,
Mad Men does the same thing. Mad Men just gets better and better.
Yep.
Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Great to see you. Well, I've been meditating on the idea that you have good news, especially since you called me so fast. Then I realized it's probably not, since you wouldn't tell me over the phone. I have news, but it's complicated. They loved it. They said it was one of the best scripts they'd ever read.
Who?
The reader at Mike Weinblatt's office. But he apparently can't give it to Mike or anyone over there because of legal reasons. And you can never call him because I've had some lawsuits. But he said you have a future, and I agree with him.
Did you tell him I'll get a lawyer? I'll sign anything they want?
Yes, but he was firmly discouraging in every way, except in his unbridled enthusiasm for the writing.
Really? What did he say? Can I talk to him? Does he want to talk to me?
Never. But in this envelope is your future. This is your destiny.
Is it a contract?
They're not interested. But I am. This is $500 and a ticket to Los Angeles. I want you to leave the Krishnas and go out there and try.
I don't think Lakshmi.
I'm not giving you this unless you promise to leave your things and go from here.
I don't have any things.
Good. This is all you need.
And, you know, it's interesting because you mentioned Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, and I sort of feel the way I do about Next Gen and Deep Space Nine. But sometimes people ask me, what do you like better, Deep Space Nine or Next Gen? And it depends what day you ask me, right? Mm-hmm. And it's sort of the same thing with Breaking Bad and A Better Call Saul. Like one day you ask me, I think it's Breaking Bad. The next day you ask me, I think it's Better Call Saul. You know, and I just go back and forth, which means I love them both, you know. And it's the same thing with Star Trek, where I love Next Gen and Deep Space Nine equally, you know, surpassed only by the genius of the original series.
Which is one of those shows that defined its own genre.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can never, it's what, you know, I think the argument that we've seen and we've made in the past as brilliant as Empire Strikes Back is it really better than Star Wars because Star Wars created the universe? So what's amazing about Empire is the risks that it took and how it's completely different. But it's different. But you know that it's the same thing.
It still depends on Star Wars.
It depends on Star Wars, and is Godfather 2 better, really better than The Godfather? It probably isn't. It's just such an amazing achievement in that it's able to match The Godfather in its scope and its power and its. But you know, without The Godfather 2 isn't the film that it is.
Yep.
So those are, you know, things to take into consideration. You know, obviously great sitcoms. I mean, Seinfeld is still a great show. Obviously, Arrested Development is probably one of my favorite shows of all time. It certainly, if you forget about the Netflix years, and it's just the first 3 years on Fox.
Community.
You know, Community, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Also, you know, a love of all things geek. It's remarkable.
Also,
and even the.
Go ahead, no, I just want to mention a show that I've recently started watching again, and that's Deadwood.
Yeah, Deadwood's great.
It's amazing.
Right, I taught him that fucking word.
Well, you know,
it's amazing.
The funny thing is, I wanted to recommend it to my mom, but then thought, you know what? No. I don't need to do that, and you can't. Yeah. It's just so filthy,
with your mom,
but it's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. I love Deadwood. And what's amazing is I never watched the 2-hour movie finale because I was like, I wanted to believe that it's not over. And even though it happened, 10 years later, they made the movie.
Right.
I just, like, I want to, I guess, rewatch all the, you know, the show before rewatching the movie.
Yeah.
You know, that's so weird that you do mention that. Like, there's, and I kind of tend to do the same thing with shows. Like, as I get towards the end of them, when I know that they're coming to an end, I stop watching.
Mm.
Yeah. Like, I have still not seen, and I love Battlestar Galactica, I still have not seen the finale. I not only have not seen it, I have trained my brain to avoid spoilers. So I don't even know what happens.
How it ends, yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
now
Lost
it
is
can be revealed.
Yeah. Now we can tell Ashley, we can spoil the whole damn thing.
I love both Galacticas, and I know the original 78 version is not great, but there's so much
I love Galactica.
Production design, the premise. I mean, there's so much.
Its ambition was unmatched.
Its ambition, and in 1978 to pull off what they pulled off was staggering.
Yeah.
And the fact that it still lives in my head, rent free, as they say, is amazing. And then I love Ron Moore's Galactica.
Yep,
you know, which, despite its flaws and an uneven final season. It's so good. It's so good. You know, and he took all the lessons he learned on Star Trek, on Next Gen and Deep Space, and applied them to Battlestar Galactica. And that's why it's heartbreaking that he never had his chance to do that with Star Trek.
Right.
Yeah. He came so close. So close. What else? So where are you? Is Twilight Zone a better show than Star Trek?
Better show?
Do you like
sometimes,
it more?
Sometimes it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, Twilight Zone is a different animal. You know, it can stand in the pantheon of great television and not be comparable to anything.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Darren.
No. That was the finish of my thought. I just didn't know it at the time.
I wanted to say that one of the other letters we got, someone was listening to our old holiday special about the 51 greatest sci-fi series of all time that we did. And they said, I was really disappointed that a Terminator the Sarah Connor Chronicles wasn't on the list. And I said, well, there was a reason for that because Ashley worked on it. So we didn't include any series that, you know, we all worked on. I mean, obviously, there's certain things that you worked on, Darren, that we did include because we weren't going to eliminate, like, you know, Voyager or whatever, you know, or some of the things that we included. But you know, Terminator was not there because Ashley was on that show for 4 years or 3 years or whatever it was.
In the future, my son will lead mankind in a war against Skynet, a computer system programmed to destroy the world. It has sent machines back through time some to kill him, one to protect him. Come with me if you want to live.
If you pretend not to know me, I might shoot you in the head.
You're John Connor.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, man. I got to tell you, that show, like, it's right now I'm staring at my poster. It's like literally across the office from me. I look up and I see Summer Glau's torso dangling from cables. Anyway, that show, it was such an amazing thing to work on. We took such incredible, strange chances. We fought so many fights. We did so many weird things. And we pulled it off with really, truly on a sliding scale with next to no money. And you know what? If I think that show was ahead of its time. It breaks my heart that it ended when it did. But I think that I feel like we cheated even getting as many episodes as we got. If that show had come out during the streaming boom, I think it would have been a monster, just a monster. I'll tell you, the thing that I will never forget about it is one day, and it was towards the end, and was talking to Josh Friedman, and he's the creator and the showrunner, and Josh looks at me and he says, I don't know what this show is, but I do know what it isn't.
Mm.
And I thought, wow, that is a hell of a thing to admit and to say, but there's value in it. But yeah, I think that was a great show. I think it is unsung in some ways, but it has lived on. Like, it is like, it's not a show that people have forgotten about. It has, it's like, you know, Dollhouse got renewed. Nobody's talking about fucking Dollhouse. No. You know, it's, but Sarah Connor has lived on. And I think it's been helped by the fact that the Terminator movies that followed it have all been terrible.
Yeah. I would put Veep in my top 10. I'd put The Americans in my top 10. So many things. And, you know, I got to give you credit because even though it may, you know, certainly not better than Star Trek, but the things you pulled off with Gene Roddenberry's Andromeda, having no money, is remarkable. And, you know, obviously I had the same experience on Pandora when you have no money. It's the whole Babylon 5 thing where you just, you know, have literally no money and then you have to figure out how to be clever.
Totally. People don't really, I think, in audience land appreciate the difficulty of that dive sometimes. Like, you know, how to tell stories when you basically have no resources to tell them. But I look back on that as a blessing. Like, that was my film school, you know, learning how to write to no money, learning how to write to just a few sets and a big cast and having a star and all those things. It was just such a great educational experience and I will always treasure it.
Yeah.
What is your fellow's stance on Veep, The Final Battle?
Oh my God, Selina Meyer has to face off against aliens.
Yeah.
I would so watch that. And I would also believe her eating an opossum or whatever Jane Badler swallows.
Right.
If you found out that Selina Meyer was
Jane
one of the
Badler
lizards.
Swallows. That's also a podcast.
That is so funny. Veep, The Final Battle. Oh my God.
Dan, did your boyfriend know anything about this?
I was trying to use Jonah for intelligence.
That's like trying to use a croissant as a fucking dildo.
I thought
that— No. Let me be more clear. It doesn't do the job, and it makes a fucking mess.
That's genius. Obviously, you know, we all love Cosmos, but that's, you know, different.
Billions upon billions. Yep. The Night Stalker.
We are all made of star stuff. Okay, maybe not all of us.
You know, we've talked about Space 1999 from time to time. We're certainly not going to, I think, mention it in the same rare fire.
No, it's not a great show. It may not even be a good show, but it's one of those things.
It has a great theme song.
But it's our show.
It's our show. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's stupid, but it's mine.
That's right.
And, you know, I go back and forth about Lost. I mean, I rewatched it about 6 months ago, and God, talk about the highest highs and the lowest lows.
Yeah.
But it, when it was good, it was really good.
Yeah. And, it was exceptional. It was good.
That's the danger of not sticking the landing, because unfortunately, it, you know, it tends to diminish people's memories. And it's like, I forgot how good Lost was.
It's so did just, they.
Yeah, I know. But it's pretty spectacular.
There are very few moments in television quite as transcendent as Locke standing up on the beach. Totally, and that is pure cinema, man. That is like, that's when we say cinema, we mean an image unpacking into story upon story upon story. And just, it's an amazing moment.
Yeah. And of course, look, there's a reason that Hill Street Blues and St. Elsewhere kind of changed television with the way they approached serialized storytelling. And, you know, Hill Street Blues, you know, for people who haven't seen it, I think it's on Hulu. It's still a delight to watch. It's phenomenal.
Do, son, how'd I do?
The car. Oh, Ma, they stole my car. That's a brand new unit, second one today.
I'll tell you something. If I have to shoot up this whole street, I'm going to get that car back. There ain't no way I'm going to file a report on this.
Okay.
No
Take
way
it
at
easy.
All.
Hey, we don't want to collect a crowd.
A crowd? A crowd? Oh, that's exactly what I want to do. Well, is
come
collect
on, Rico,
a great
Rico. Hey, Rico, we
crowd.
Lose two
don't
or three cars every
me.
Month. They park them, they leave them. No big deal.
It's a big deal to me. That's the second unit today. That's a brand new unit. Esterhaus is going to kill me.
Rico, shut up. Man, we have no car and we have no radio, man. So let's just be cool. Let's just call in and get another unit.
You know, MASH is still phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
I was never a huge NYPD Blue fan, ironically, after Caruso left. But those first two seasons are pretty great.
Can we say a little bit more about MASH? Because I just realized, you know what? That would definitely be on my list of shows that I really loved when I was growing up. Like, I just, that was when it was stripped into syndication, you know, watching that every day, watching that show evolve from kind of a grab ass comedy in its first season into a show that was really maybe the first dramedy that was just as interested in its big dramatic moments as it was in its laughs.
Right.
I mean, it's just, it's a, I can't think of another show really that's quite like it.
Well, and that, it, you know, the movie is brilliant and the TV show is brilliant. You know, it's very rare that you see the adaptation of a hit movie, you know, done, you know, and, it, you know, it is, it, there's no question that the TV shows, I think, is more significant and looms larger than even the movie, you know, at this point. You know, it's more well-known, it's more enduring, it had more of an impact, as great as the movie is. So, yeah, MASH is, it's incredible because the cultural footprint of MASH was huge and it's not felt as much now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's amazing about
Star
Trek.
Erased.
You have a show from, the Star Trek, a show from 1966 that wasn't all that successful, that continues to have this enormous cultural footprint that much bigger shows that were on for much longer don't have. And they didn't get any bigger than MASH. That's why it'll be interesting to see. Like, I love Succession. It's one of my favorite shows of all time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if in 10 years it's going to have any kind of footprint.
Well, especially, especially with it being on, pay TV, as we called it. So many of those shows, certainly that were started on HBO, you just can't find anymore and you can't see them.
It's not TV. It's
what
HBO.
Do you think about Game of Thrones? Is Game of Thrones a better show than Star Trek? And will it have, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, 20 years from now, are people still going to be talking about it?
I think so, yes. And because, we can talk about the Star Trek of it all. But I think it is also one of those shows that defined its own category, right? For good or ill. And regardless of, you know, what one thinks of the final season, and I'm being very careful. Of what one thinks about the final season, the truth of the matter is that show is an achievement. And
huge achievement.
When it was remarkable. Great, it was great. And what really pisses me off is when I see people talking about that show and they talk about, you know, there's snarky bastards online everywhere and screw them. But, you know, they talk about Benioff and Weiss. And it's like they've reduced their output and their accomplishment down to missteps in the final season while taking away from them the fact that they built up, created, and frankly maintained like a consistent level of quality mm-hmm. for a long time. This show that was different than anything anybody had ever seen, right?
To make an analogy, it's like judging Star Trek based on the third season.
Yes.
Tarring it with the brush of the third season and negating the genius and how revolutionary the first two seasons were. Because you're right, Game of Thrones is remarkable. And I did a rewatch, I don't know, about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And, you know, you can quibble with, you know, how it ended. But that doesn't take away from the incredible achievement of the show, which could have gone sideways in so many ways. And it's just remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, it's everything. It changed the way that we looked at expected beats, obligatory scenes. You know, one of the reasons why, you know, the death of Ned Stark is so shocking is because in television, that's not what happens. Right. Because in television, if he was a point of view character, he is not supposed to die, and then he does. And then people get whacked. You get attached to people, and away they go. And you're surprised, even if you know that it's coming. But it was more than that. It was the characters were real. It felt like they lived in a real world. It felt like their jeopardy was real. And then cinematically, they did crazy things, like the Battle of the Bastards. Mm-hmm. The fact that they stuck with Kit Harington, they stuck with Jon Snow in that fight and essentially did it from his point of view. Now, there were production reasons why that ended up happening, but it was a happy accident that it's amazing filmmaking. And it does a sort of a fantasy, big pseudo medieval battle differently than any film or any show has ever done. It's not, you know, warmed over Lord of the Rings. There is something very intimate and terrifying yet epic.
No, it's so funny. As much as I like Lord of the Rings, and especially I like, you know, Conan and particularly Excalibur, you know, the thing that I find akin most of all to Game of Thrones is Paul Verhoeven's Flesh and Blood, you know, which I always loved and is, you know, one of his least seen movies.
I haven't seen it, but I know I need to.
Yeah. Oh, you dig it the most. You got to see Flesh and Blood, man.
Okay.
It's Rutger Hauer and Jennifer Jason Leigh. It's so good.
Okay.
You know, and it's great. And speaking of so good, you know, a lot of people think, oh, my first book was about Star Trek. No, my first published book was about this 1990 cult classic, Twin Peaks.
Right.
Boom, boom. And I love Twin Peaks. I mean, again, boom, another boom. Show that is as audacious, if not more so, than Star Trek and, you know, as deeply flawed as some of Star Trek can be, but as brilliant as Star Trek at its best. And I love Twin Peaks and I admire the return, but I don't love it the way I love the original.
The original.
Yeah, Twin Peaks The Next Generation is good, but it's not the original.
Yeah, I second everything that you just said. It's like, it's fascinating. It's just, it's not what we kind of loved about it, man. And talk about something, again, it was David Lynch, but it was cinematic, right? Which you don't often get in television. Yeah, and it was just different and it was strange. Absolutely. And I wish I could get Bob Engels to engage and kind of get him onto Deck 78 and just tell stories. Because I could tell the stories that he told about that show.
No, we need him to do it.
But we need him to do it.
Let's get him off his ass and get him on Deck 78 to tell Twin Peaks shows. It's time. And just a few other shows, you know, closing thoughts. Obviously, you know, I have in the past, and I know Mike Acuda is called the best Star Trek show that isn't a Star Trek show, The West Wing, during the Aaron Sorkin years, not the John Wells years I dismissed, but the Aaron Sorkin years of The West Wing is television at its best and is up there with Star Trek. You know, I'm a big fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel, which are also terrific. You know, Star Trek gets is better for me, but it's better for me, it's better for you. But I do love it. And of course, I've mentioned this in the past, NBC's Crime Story with Dez Farina, which was
my love that show.
After Miami Vice is one of my favorites of all time. So
Crime Story was an amazing show.
I love it. And talk about cinematic, it's just amazing. And the way it completely changed, it starts in Chicago, goes to Vegas, and then ends up in South America. And, to kill its main villain with a nuclear bomb and then have him come back the next season. It did some crazy shit. So pretty amazing.
TV.
Darren, anything we missed?
Probably, but I'm happy with the ones that we've mentioned because I'm in a position where I don't like watching new stuff unless everyone is excited about it. Mm.
I don't like sports, but I love Friday Night Lights. I also liked Bay City Blues, the short-lived spin after Hill Street Blues. It was about a minor league baseball team. Also a big fan of The White Lotus on HBO. A lot of HBO shows. Oh,
yeah.
You know what I bet you guys like? This show's on par with Star Trek. At least the first season was.
Curb Your Enthusiasm. Finch.
Well, I love Curb, obviously, but because I am Larry David. But the David Fincher series Mindhunter.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. That show is great. Is it true there's a third season now?
That's the rumor, right? Okay. If only. Yeah. Let's hope.
I like it if only for the look at all these vintage tape recorders that I have, most of them. I love that aspect. Of course, the drama is okay, too, but,
I think it's great.
I have one I want to add. So, and it's in a category that we haven't even talked about. It's probably its own thing. But in adult animation, Castlevania, I think that the show peaks early. It peaks at about episode 7 of its second season. And then there's other stuff happens and sometimes it's great and sometimes it's fine. But the emotion and the real human drama that they managed to convey in animation is just, it's difficult to describe. I mean, the seventh episode of that second season is just, it's staggering. It takes your breath away. It's as good as anything else you have ever seen on television in any form. And I can't recommend it highly enough. And also, wave to my pals at Powerhouse. But
now I have to say, if anyone is expecting us to launch a spinoff podcast for any of these shows, you're going to be gravely disappointed. However, if you're a fan of Mission Impossible, you should check out our friends over at Spy Hards, who do a great spy podcast. They just had who did they have on? They just had a great episode with the executive from MGM UA, who I interviewed in my book, Nobody Does It Better. But they do a great show. I'm a big fan of what they do over there. And I know our friend Mark Bernardin did a Battlestar Galactica podcast for a while, which was good. But I don't know if anybody's doing a Crime Story podcast.
Probably not.
No, we were the only ones for that couple episodes.
Yeah, and then we ran away. When that started, you always knew you were in for a treat. There it is, The World Beyond Star Trek. Get out of your parents' basement. Turn on the cable, turn on
or
the streaming.
Or stay in the basement and watch some favorite TV shows.
Stay in the basement and watch some of these other shows because there's so much great television out there. Why waste time watching crap when you can watch? Or you can turn on Pluto TV and watch the classic Family Feud with Richard Dawson.
Well, that's
which
true.
Is what we've been doing.
Which has a lot more to do with Game of Thrones than you might think.
Pluto just added a dedicated Deep Space Nine channel. So if you're a Deep Space Nine fan, there's no reason to buy the DVDs because they look like crap. It's not any worse on Pluto. You just got to wait until they do something. Oh, speaking of us, we broke that whole Deep Space Nine news, but I love all these emails where they say, what have you heard about this new film that Paramount's doing, The Origin of the Federation.
Have we heard about it?
We did 6 months ago. We told everybody, you know what's going to happen? We're letting you know Paramount is developing their Independence Day, Origin of the Federation, Romulan War, that's not tied into continuity. It's their big attempt to kind of reboot the franchise. You're going to be hearing about it in the next couple of months. And then you're going to say, wow, did you know? And we'll have broken it 6 months before. Yeah. That's exactly what happened. We told people that it was coming, that this was in development, that this was going on. And then I guess Hollywood Reporter Deadline broke it like months later. And everybody's like, did you hear?
But also,
did you know?
Also, I'm going to say it out loud. Don't hold your breath.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. Especially as Skydance ends up buying Paramount.
Yeah.
I think that will
very,
be the first
very likely
domino to fall. Yeah.
Although I got to say, you know, the rumor is that, you know, a hedge fund wanted to buy it and chop it up for parts. And Sherry Redstone didn't want that to happen, even though it would have fetched the biggest price for them.
Right. Yeah, like
$25 million.
She didn't
want her father's legacy
good for her
to be chopped up and sold for parts. Thank God.
Yeah.
Because there's so much history there. And if they sold off the lot for condos and then the movie division and TV and you started just auctioning off, because I could see, oh, we'll sell Star Trek here, Mission Impossible there, and da da da. And I mean, oh, thank God.
Yeah, if they're going to do that, they should go with Heritage, you know?
Yeah, right.
But at least, you know, at least Skydance will keep the studio together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
hopefully.
And TV to an extent. So anyway, well, this was interesting.
That's a little, yeah.
I think it's time to close the mailbag.
A little sidebar with the Trexperts.
You know who's going to like this episode? Karen Walker. Because we didn't talk to anybody. No tapioca pudding. No
balloon punching.
No convention
guests.
Interviews.
Yeah.
No. And it was just us, John.
Yeah.
So,
but wait. Hold on. Were we super negative, though?
You know who's going to love this episode? Rob Burnett. Because Bethany Howe said he's awesome.
Yeah, that's true.
And he's going to love that.
Well, he does love that.
Rob, we think you're awesome too.
We do.
We think you're awesome. Don't let the haters get you down. See, the difference is he cares what people think. We don't.
Don't give in to hate. That leads to the dark side. Or something I can't
remember.
And
the dark side leads to dancing.
Anyway, well, listen, if you're a fan of these crazy conversations, you can continue the conversation now on Discord, on the Inglourious Trexperts Discord channel. And it's been very active, and it's continuing to grow. The only thing that's missing is you. So come join us on Discord. And if you can't find your way to the Discord channel, check the show notes with a link on how to join up with us.
And if you're a member of Trexperts Plus, by all means, because there are, or there will be, benefits for being a Trexperts Plus member and joining
Trexperts with benefits. That doesn't sound exactly...
Sure it does.
No. We need to workshop that.
Just like Tasha and Data.
Oh my God, stop it. Oh my God, this is terrible. And of course, don't miss us on one of our future convention appearances. In May, we'll be at Ticonderoga. In Ticonderoga, New York, which is exciting, on the Star Trek tour. We'll be in Oklahoma City. Later this summer, Darren will be at Raleigh, North Carolina. And trust me, you don't want to miss that one. Some special things await. And Ashley and I will both be at Comic-Con. We'll be reunited in San Jose later. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Nightmare Weekend this fall. And then bringing it on all home in Columbus, Ohio, the home of the great printer that we just found out about. December.
If nothing else, we'll have wonderful printed material.
Oh, yes, we might have a big announcement about another convention this summer.
Yeah, but we're not going to spoil it. Too soon.
No, too soon. Too soon. Because we may not. It may not happen. And then I'll feel like a fool.
Well, yeah,
I don't like to be made to look ridiculous.
Well, but we like it when you look ridiculous.
Waltz is listening.
There's a Mugatu head in my bed. What's going on?
That's right.
I need that Mako route.
All I'm saying is Scooter should be fitted with deflector dishes. That's it. That's all I'm saying.
That's right.
It's a Sicilian message. Mugato sleeps with the fishes.
Hang up the... Close the close the communicator. Yeah, Luca Prozzi sleeps with the fishes. It took me 900 times watching The Godfather to finally realize that. He says, you got to find Luca Brasi. And he's calling around. And then he says, oh, and the fish comes. Oh, Luca Brasi sees the fishes. And Michael hangs up the phone.
Yeah.
Done. Oh, my God. And I can't wait to see Megalopolis, the Coppola film. I hope it gets distribution.
I do, too. Me too.
Yeah.
But, it's the same story of everything he's ever released.
Yeah.
It's exactly. Always panic mode, and I find that fascinating.
Because risk is his business.
I guess so.
Yeah, yeah. So, and of course, please rate us 5 stars. Even if you think, what was it? We're smug? I don't remember. Yeah, so.
At least we get 3 stars for smugness.
That's right.
Right.
Even though we deserve 4 for smugness.
That's right.
Well,
is that all
I
it goes
do.
To? And also check out our other fine podcast, The Weirder Beardos, with Darren and Kirk Thatcher, 4:30 Movie on Fridays. We're back with all new episodes. And of course, the Trexperts Briefing Room with Peter and Lisa, and Deck 78, our subscriber only podcast, which you can subscribe to either through Inglourious Trexperts at Spotify or The 4:30 Movie on Apple Podcasts. Either way, it's the same great Deck 78 goodness as we explore all the different pop culture possibilities with some great guests. So check that out. But we'll be back next week with an all new episode of Inglourious Trexperts. All new. An all new interview.
Not all nude. All new.
Well, who knows? You know, honestly,
it's audio only.
All nude expert. People who are listening don't know.
That's true.
They don't know the truth of the
I'm not wearing any pants. Film at 11.
Eyewitness News starts now. Oh, wrong podcast.
Wrong podcast, yes. Eyewitness Nudes.
Oh, God. I think it's time. I think we need to get out of here. This is going nowhere good. So next week, however, we'll have an all-new guest.
Something else. Something else for you to love.
Now you can't unsay it. No.
Or unsee it. It's very sad. Anyway, on behalf of Ashley Edward Miller, Darren Doctorman, and myself, Mark A. Altman, and a vacationing Gary Lockwood, keep on trekking gloriously, of course, and we'll see you next week.
Purple Stride in April. Go!
PurpleStride.org.
/team trick.
We're a team! We're a team!
There's our leader, Kitty! Our vision of hope!
Hey, Darren, is this rumor going around that you got a new podcast?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's Trexperts adjacent. It's a fun thing. It's called The Weirded Beardos. Yeah, and before you react, it's Kirk Thatcher, our favorite punk on the bus, and myself just talking about stuff.
But I hate him.
You don't hate him.
No, I'm kidding. I'm doing a song from Star Trek IV. I hate you, right?
I berate you.
Oh, yeah. But I don't berate him, and I don't hate him. And if he's involved with you, then I love you.
Well, thanks. And, you know, it's basically just us talking about sort of all things related to our history of working in the industry. You know, together we have like 78 years of experience working in the entertainment biz.
I'm going to have to listen to that. I thought it was about maintaining your beards or something.
It has nothing to do with beards, actually, which is kind of funny. It's fun. We basically hang out for an hour every other week. So, come and join us. Look for, the Weirded Beardos on Spotify. If you just want to hear the audio, and, we're actually on YouTube as well. The Weirded Beardos.
Great. Can't wait to check it out.
Thanks.
First, start of the right and straight on till morning.